The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out-of-the-room-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hey there. Wonderful, wonderful seeing all of our wonderful events that we have got coming up with us in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I think that this is an exciting show. We're doing three goddesses all in the same show.
It's a little ambitious.
Yes, it is.
A little ambitious.
Yes. But we are not faltering. So how was your week?
I don't even have any idea. It was pretty good. Tuesday night started there's a workshop I'm teaching with a couple of other lovely ladies called the Beauty Pentacle. And I feel like it's work that's really needed in the world right now. There's so much ugly, terrible, destructive things that are just right there at our fingertips and being pumped into our vision 24/7. And so the Beauty Pentacle is not only about the beauty of ourselves as just being the creatures that we are on this planet and what a freaking miracle it is that we can do all the things that we can do and recognizing our inherent beauty, but it's also about seeing the beauty in the world.
Right.
So this first class was Tuesday, and it's a six-week class, so for the next 6 weeks, although we're taking election night off, so it'll be 7 weeks if you don't count election night, we're going to be working on these concepts. So it was really a lovely start. We created a beautiful devotional altar to Aphrodite that's going to stay up in the location where class is happening. It's actually at Milk and Honey, so if you are local to Sonoma County, stop by Milk and Honey and add something beautiful to the Aphrodite altar, which will be up for the next 7 weeks.
Nice.
So that feels really good. I feel like that's something I need personally in my life right now. And I didn't sleep a lot, so I'm a little like, on one hand, beautiful things, and we're so blessed, and humanity is amazing, and on the other hand, I'm snoring.
Well, I promise we'll try to keep you from snoring online here.
And how was your week?
Well, it kind of had its edges. I think instead of the beauty that you were taking and sharing in, I was having a bit of a bout of anger. I was working on just, you know, things that people are doing, and I'm not talking in the big, big picture, even though I could, but more like driving on a road and bicyclists and all the things that were going on, and I think I was beginning to get overloaded on the concept of entitlement, and I really was getting a little bit hostile, so I needed to really ratchet it down, and I was able to do that today, and I was able to find a little bit more of that evenness, but it was kind of building there. So that was my week, which, you know, encompasses several days, and then, of course, a lot of research, because this particular episode has a lot of things we're going to talk about, and hopefully get as much in as we possibly can, power-packed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, I do these goddess gatherings once a month. So in a goddess gathering, we focus on one goddess, and we spend anywhere from 90 minutes to 2.5 hours talking about culture, talking about history, talking about stories, and then we do a ritual, right? So tonight we have, that's one goddess. Tonight we have 1 hour, and we're going to talk about three goddesses. So, you know, we'll make it happen.
We always do. So we're going to start with the fact that the goddesses are Persephone, Demeter, and Hecate, or Hecate, depending on how you want to pronounce that.
Right. I've also heard Demeter pronounced Demeter.
There we are. So what we decided is there are actually two, probably several more, but we found two variations of the Persephone, Demeter myth of what happens in terms of Persephone's going to the underworld. And we decided we were going to share those first.
Mm-hmm.
So lucky me, I'm going to get to do the one that's the Cretan one, which it basically takes Demeter as the grain goddess back to the Cretan times. And she, of course, gave the gift of agriculture and cultivation. And her daughter, Persephone, who they also called Kore, is this beautiful young girl, and she goes out into the hills, and she's picking wildflowers, and she really loves, you know, certain ones. And she comes back to her mother, and she says, "Mother, while I was out in the hills, I saw these spirits, and the spirits of the dead, and they were wandering aimlessly. What can we do about this?" And Demeter says, "Well, that's part of my responsibility is dealing with the dead, but I have this rather large, expansive responsibility of the growing plants and the grains and the earth and all, and I haven't done such a hot job here." She didn't use hot, but that's okay. And so Persephone says, "I would like to do this. I would like to go help them." Well, as every mother who knows when their child says something and you're going, "No!" Demeter had a very difficult time trying to dissuade her daughter, which she failed in. So she decided, okay, so she takes her to this very dark crevice in a very cliff area, and she hands her daughter a pomegranate, and she hands her daughter a torch, and she hugs her and tells her how much she loves her. And then, of course, Persephone proceeds to descend into the dark and goes down and farther down and finally comes to this huge cavern, and it's full of these spirits wandering around of the dead aimlessly, but there's a throne of stone, and there's a little sort of like table to the side of stone. She puts a platter of the pomegranate seeds down there, and then she sits down on the throne, and she calls each spirit to her and marks each spirit with pomegranate juice, which is the promise of regeneration, rebirth. And she proceeds to work with the spirits and keep them, you know, moving through the process and not feeling lost or lonely. And so she becomes the queen of the underworld and the guide of resurrection for these spirits to come back to life. And then at a certain point, her mother, of course, is up there lost and lonely, and, of course, the whole thing of mourning and the earth becoming barren for the time being. And then there is this feeling, and her mother decides she needs to go to the cavern door, and she goes, and there comes Persephone back up. All the flowers are blooming. The whole thing is this reuniting. And the process here that I found most intense was it was about the mother-daughter relationship and when the mother needs to let go. And that was the part that, obviously, because I do have a daughter and she is an adult, was something that was very touching to me. And it wasn't in any way negative. It wasn't about a massive loss in a very negative way. So that basically is the Cretan myth, and I will give it over to Phoenix for the other side.
So the other story is probably one that you learned in school. It's the more classical Greek telling. And so we have this young, beautiful maiden called Kore, and she is lounging about in a beautiful meadow, and for some reason the god of the underworld, Hades, is lurking about, doing whatever underworld gods do when they're peeking in on us mortals. And he sees Persephone, and he falls in love with her, at first sight. And here is where the story gets tricksy, and we will talk about this more in just a minute. But in the tale right now, for this moment, Persephone sees him and falls madly in love with him. And he whisks her away to the underworld. In the meantime, Persephone's mother, Demeter, who is the queen of of agriculture. She is the goddess that presides over the seasons and things growing and things being lush and having food. She finds that her daughter is missing, and she loses her mind. And she spends weeks and weeks searching for Persephone, asking everyone if they've seen her, begging, crying, tearing her clothes and her hair, and losing it completely. She goes from city to city to city asking for anyone to help her. And finally, she is so distraught that she's withdrawn her life force from the planet, and so things aren't growing, and things can't be eaten, and there are no fruits, and there are no grains. And Zeus, the great god, the one in charge of the Olympians, hears the cry of humanity, that the human beings are starving because Demeter has withdrawn her life force from the planet. And so he sends the two gods who can go between the realms, Mercury, Hermes, and Hecate, to work their magic. Now, Hermes is known to be quite the talker, and he convinces Hades to release Persephone. And Hecate goes because she can also cross between the worlds, and she has the two torches, and she holds one torch in front of her and one torch behind her so that she can lead Persephone out from the underworld and Persephone can see where she is going. So we have Hecate being the psychopomp, the one that guides the soul back into the land of the living, where Demeter and Persephone are reunited, and Demeter allows her life force to return to the land. But before Persephone left the underworld, she ate some certain amount of pomegranate seeds. And because she ate the food of the dead, it meant she could not forever be gone from the underworld. She was now a part of the underworld. And now she is Persephone, no longer Kore. She has become the queen of the underworld. She stepped into her power. And so a deal is struck that she will remain over in the land of the living with her mother for 6 months, and then for 6 months she will return to the underworld and be with her husband, be with Hades and the dead, and preside as queen. So that is the more classical Greek version of the tale. And even that version, there are lots of different versions.
As we had discussed beforehand, and we were kind of going through our notes of what we want to bring out.
Yeah.
And of course, truthfully, the particular version that comes with the Homeric hymns and the Greeks is about the transition from matriarchal to patriarchal.
Yes.
And, of course, there is the dynamic of an aggressive point of reference versus a very easy, loving transition.
Right, right. And we have these characters who, in the older tale of this story, there are no psychopomps. There are no characters that have to come in and make a deal.
Right.
All of this happens between mother and daughter, and it's the process of the mother letting go and the daughter stepping into her power. Kore cannot become Persephone until she cuts the apron strings, right?
Exactly.
So we have this tale of this cycle of relationship between a mother and her children and the release from the mother, but also the child stepping into queenhood.
Right.
Right. And the Eleusinian Mysteries, the Eleusinian Mysteries, is this story, and it is still to this day enacted.
Yes, it is.
This ritual of going to the underworld and returning, and this relationship between mother and daughter. And then we have this Hades character who comes in, and we did this ritual many years ago where we invoked Hades and Persephone as the deities for the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Lammas ritual, I think. And we did some things with gender. So a male-bodied person invoked Persephone and a female-bodied person invoked Hades. And the person who invoked Hades wore a leather jacket.
Oh,
and
wow.
She was all, you know, very, like, biker, like, tough guy. It was so freaking awesome. And so I always think of Hades like that now.
Right.
That bad boy that you just can't help but fall in love with.
Now, isn't that an interesting thought? Because going to how most of... We have a lot of people who do go for the bad boy.
Yeah.
and even films and books and things are always the bad boy that gets redeemed through
right.
the love
of the woman.
Of the woman.
Right. Which is very much Persephone and Hades.
It exactly is. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So it does have another take on it as opposed to the more aggressive process of
right.
what is described in some of the other variations
right.
of this.
Right, where Hades actually kidnaps her and forcibly rapes her and forces her to stay in the underworld.
Right.
A very different tale, which in my opinion, and Elvira and I were checking in before and I kind of got in my little heated soapbox and started proselytizing about the goddess doesn't get raped and the goddess blah, blah, blah. Anyway, my opinion is she, you don't fall in love with your captor. You don't fall in love with the douchebag who's been torturing you for 6 months. That's not what a goddess does. When you step into your power, you step into your power because you are becoming.
Mm-hmm.
You are becoming queen. And Hades is the catalyst for that. He's not the one that forces it. He's the one that makes the opportunity. He's the catalyst. So I feel like the virgins.
Yeah.
I feel like the versions of this tale where Hades is the attacker, the aggressor, that negative energetic, that is more patriarchal spin
mm-hmm.
than anything else. She was the innocent maiden.
Right.
Yeah.
And that goes to a series of, you know, where to put the female and her power and the energies.
Right.
And I guess that would be the next level of versions that would take over to, once again, I don't want to use the word brainwash, but I'll just use the word retrain people's
yeah.
thinking
right.
to make
right.
it okay that this is going on. So with that, let's go to Persephone.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
kind of, because she is the beginning, Persephone actually will go to Kore, which
yeah.
that's the correct way to put it.
Right, and we've sort of touched on this already, right? This beautiful maiden starts off as Kore. She becomes Persephone when she steps into her role as queen.
Mm-hmm.
And in the tale Elvira told, the Cretan myth, you really get to see this stepping into power, this recognizing that this role needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, there's a kind of a little bridge in some of the mythology between the Cretan story and the more classical Greek version.
Right.
Where when the Olympians showed up, there were several, the patriarchal sky gods,
mm-hmm.
there were several sky gods interested in Persephone Kore
mm-hmm.
and wooed her, Zeus being one of them,
mm-hmm.
Hermes being another,
mm-hmm.
I think there may be another one, Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And Demeter was like, no, sorry, boys, you're not good enough for my precious baby.
Does this sound familiar with how we view our daughters
right.
and the ones that are not good enough?
Right, right, right. That, I mean, Apollo, the sun god.
Hey, you know, pretty cool dude, got sun, got,
yeah.
you know, kind of gold, all that.
Yeah,
come on.
I think he might be gay.
Oh, well.
That's my opinion, though.
But you never know. It kind of went both ways there. But I would say that when you look at this, it is the representation within the concepts, whether it's matriarchal or not,
mm-hmm.
is in the situation where the female, from being a youth, a young, beautiful maiden,
yes.
going into just what we're talking about, her power, and what is her power? In many ways, it is her sexual power.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that she becomes promiscuous. It's just the bleeding time happens. We transition into the next level,
right?
And instead of making it base, the elevation of it,
right?
And I know that through many of our aspects in our traditions of Wicca, witchcraft, paganism, it is that
mm-hmm.
it is an initiation and an honoring and a raising of that.
Yeah.
But it was a power to create, and that was, I think, the fear factor, because, I mean, we're talking anxiety here about, you know, a sense of power and structure. So my feeling is that I look at what I'm seeing here in this myth at this point in Persephone
mm-hmm.
as the mothers learning
mm-hmm.
how to let go of their daughters.
Right.
To allow them to be the queen.
Right.
To allow them
right.
to find that part
find
of their power.
Own realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's interesting is the name Kore
mm-hmm.
is the translation for maiden.
Mm-hmm.
It means young woman, maiden,
right?
Where Persephone, there's lots of different translations of the word Persephone, the name Persephone.
Mm-hmm.
So often it's wise or in motion.
Mm-hmm.
It also can mean death.
Exactly.
And what I find fascinating is in some traditions, to speak the name Persephone was actually considered very taboo because she was so powerful that if you spoke her name and you didn't do it with beautiful, perfect reverence, you would
mm-hmm.
invoke her wrath.
Right.
And you were calling death upon yourself.
Well,
so when they spoke about her classically, they would only refer to her as Kore.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same Persephone was to bring upon death.
Bring upon death.
So that's a powerful woman right there.
No kidding. And, you know, I mean, she came from, and this is where we get into the concepts of light and dark.
Yeah.
She takes on what becomes her mother, but in light and in dark.
Right. Right. You can't have the growth without the death.
Exactly.
And again, we're looking at rebirth.
Exactly.
And the rebirth, to go back to what you said a moment ago about
mm-hmm.
sexuality,
mm-hmm.
the rebirth happens through Persephone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and in our, and you know, we have to bring sometimes up to modern times to make it relevant,
mm-hmm.
is that it doesn't have to be the birth of a child. It is creativity. So it can be the birth in a myriad of ways that are creative. And in our world, it isn't just arts or crafts or cooking.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, things that are technology and science. There's creativity in all of these areas that the woman, the young woman, can go into
mm-hmm.
to become
yeah.
the queen.
Yeah. And I feel modern paganism really sort of holds Persephone in that maiden aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like often she's stuck there.
Yeah.
Which is not how I identify with her. I feel more connected to Persephone as the queen of the underworld, mm-hmm. where she is a powerhouse and she is known to hold, like if you've been cursed, she makes sure that that curse happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she holds you to the things that you've earned.
Right.
And so she's so much more than just this little maiden
mm-hmm.
who gets taken advantage of by, you know, the bad boy. There's
right.
so much more to her
right.
that she often gets painted as just this little sweet maiden.
Interesting you bring that up. I guess because I worked in the film industry for a while, I'm thinking of Grease.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the character that is the young girl. And
Fantasy.
And she basically is there, and then the bad boy, and then, of course, at the very end, she transitions. But
right.
does she transition really to a bad girl, or she just lets go of the other aspect of youth and steps into the next level of power?
Right. Interesting. I'm going to go watch that movie now and watch it as if that's Persephone in Hades.
Well, I guess that's now how we revision. Over the years, what I found, and I guess that's just because, again, I say I was in the film industry, I tend to teach by using film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love being able to see, because sometimes even the writers and the people that put it together don't see the mythology and the depth of what
Absolutely.
They're putting there.
Absolutely.
But if you look, the old saying is, if you look, you'll find it.
Yep.
And it's not always the bad, horrific stuff.
Yep.
But so Persephone really opens up a whole process of where we go in our maturity. And it's interesting because I will note here, because we're going to jump into, obviously, Demeter.
Yes.
That we have done previous to this, we have done episodes on the full moon,
mm-hmm.
the dark moon, and the new moon.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the triplicity of what we're talking about, we are talking about just that. So Persephone is basically the new moon, or Kore is the new moon.
Right, right.
So
right.
it kind of makes me realize that we didn't even think of the fact that we were setting it up in this way, but it does present us with the fact that that particular planet and astrological aspects are about the changing face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
In, I think, what, red poppies is what one of the traditional things that is Persephone / Kore
mm-hmm.
Is her flower. And interesting enough, this is a side note, and I do have an altar set up, and I have pictures of the Temple of Hecate on the island of Sicily, which was named the Isle of Persephone.
Mm.
And it was very interesting when I found that out, because I was never really
concerned about that. I was concerned about other things, and it was very interesting to note on the number of temples. And, of course, Hecate's temple was adjacent to Demeter's temple.
Right.
Because of the connection between the two. But interesting is that the Isle is Persephone, and that's, you know, Sicily has a dark side to it.
Yeah.
And not just because of, you know, the popular cultures of what the Black Hand or Mafia or any of that. That's more the masculine patriarchal stuff. It's very interesting. It has a dark side. It's on the side of Mount Etna.
Right.
That's Mount Etna. It's a volcano.
Right.
The mother in all her glory.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but
speaking of mother.
Yes, we will go to mother.
Let's chat a little about Miss Demeter here. And I have to say, telling Elvira this. So we've done a goddess gathering on Persephone. We've done a goddess gathering on Hecate. But I have not yet done one on Demeter. So my normal research process, I was really starting from scratch with Demeter. And I've kind of always, I think I haven't done a gathering for Demeter yet, right? There's lots of goddesses. It takes time to get to them all. But I haven't done one for her yet because I always just sort of held her as this, like, whiny mom, you know? And, like, there's not much substance there. She just feels sorry for herself and she can't let go.
Right.
So clearly I'm still dealing with my own mother issues here. But in doing research and doing my, you know, my normal routine that I would do to prepare for a goddess gathering on Demeter, there is so much more to Demeter. She really is this ancient mother agricultural goddess, so much older. And the Eleusinian mysteries, you know, her story and the cycle of her and Persephone is older than the Olympic gods.
Of course, yeah, very much older.
Yeah, so these two these three goddesses too, actually, because Hecate is believed to be a Titaness. These three goddesses are older than the Olympic gods. They're older than Zeus. They come from cultures and stories much older than what we're familiar with. We sort of lump all of the Olympians together.
Yes, and it's interesting because, of course, Demeter's cult was, you know, the center, at least as far as some of what the information shows, is Myasthenic.
Yeah.
And that was like 13th century B.C. That's a long ways away.
Yeah.
You know, but it's interesting also that her festivals, her honoring goes up to the 19th century.
Right.
So that spans a hell of a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not talking about paganism bringing it forward.
Right, right.
So.
And she's connected to grain, fertility, plant life, all of that, but she's also considered the lawbringer, she of the grain, she who shakes the earth. She's this deep, powerful, energetic of earth mother.
Right.
You know, for those who are familiar with the Pachamama concept from South America, Pachamama is the earth mother, but she's not like this goddess on high. She is literally the earth.
Yes.
And that's what we have here with Demeter. She is literally the earth.
Right. And she spanned, I mean, they call her, you know, she has also been known as the white mare of life as well as the black mare of life, and mare being horse because of the dynamics in terms of Phygia and where, you know, these were coming from. There's like, she's a meta mama. She is like beyond.
Yeah.
She really is. And, of course, her symbol, I love this, is the delta or the triangle. Because that is the female genitalia.
Right.
So that is that kind of was like, you know, among all the other things I've done is that I keep using triangles, and I'm like, now I understand.
And her name translates as mother in certain languages, meter. I'm not even going to try to pretend to pronounce this Proto-Indo-European word, but it translates as mother. And she's connected to spelt, rye, emmer, all of these different grains. Literally, these are different translations of her name. So she, you know, she's what brings life. Without grains, without fruits, without vegetables, humanity does not live. We need her just for our basic survival.
Right. And obviously, the mother bee, you know, is one of the animals or insects that is about that, which if you think about, you know, the industriousness. And as you said, the lawgiver, it's interesting that the Romans contend that she was the one that founded the system of law that they put into effect.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's bouncing all over the place.
And there's lots of connections to her, to go back to the horses again. So here, okay, I'm going to back up for a second. So
okay.
Here we're looking at the Greeks, right, the Greeks. And we lump Greek culture into Greek, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's be real. Where these gods and goddesses came from, it wasn't just Greek. There was this city who did it this way,
mm-hmm.
and this city who did it this way, and this
mm-hmm.
city, and these cities are hundreds of miles apart, which is nothing for us now in the modern world.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, that was several days worth of travel.
Exactly.
Right? So we have these goddesses and these gods who have different names from different regions, and then as Greece grew as a society,
mm-hmm.
as these cities started to become brother and sister cities to each other,
mm-hmm.
and adopting each other's gods, these gods either got bigger or they've disappeared.
Right.
We don't even know all the gods that have disappeared over
right.
time.
Right.
But one of the things the Greeks do is their gods have different names depending on where they're from. For example, Demeter Luisia. This is the bathed Demeter. This is the Demeter from a specific region.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Onkos. I don't know. I apologize for destroying the name.
Mm-hmm.
But from this location, there's a specific story of her where she has to go and bathe to calm her anger.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So there is Demeter Aganaape, Demeter Potnia, Demeter Desponia. So all of these second titles, and that gives you a specific regionality. And this is true with all of the Greek gods
mm-hmm.
and goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as we talk about her in her mare form, or her in connected to bathing, or her connected to being a chthonic deity, it's because of these different regions of her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we definitely have, she is the focal point.
Yes.
Because she is mother.
Yes.
And you have, which the daughter becomes a queen. She may come to be a mother, but she becomes a queen in her own little satellite. And then you, of course, will get to Hecate and the crone or the wise woman, the old wise woman. But it's very interesting how Demeter is so integral
yeah.
and made it, as I said, so far into the 19th century that, I mean, Christianity
yeah.
had a heck of a time trying to figure out what to do with it because
right.
they were still doing festivals to her.
Right, and they still are.
The
names of those festivals and the guise of those festivals may have shifted and changed over
mm-hmm.
time, but they're still doing the Eleusinian Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
They're still happening.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So with that, I think we can safely say that we will come back and probably be able to talk a little bit more about Demeter
yes.
and things that we haven't picked up here
yes.
and then be able to go to Hecate, and then what we're going to try and do is give you some ideas about what to do with this information.
Right, right.
So
now that you know all these goddesses, what are you going to do now?
Really, really. And, oh, by the way, doorways are sacred to women. Why?
Mm.
They are openings. They are transitions.
Right.
Yes, so that in
portal.
And, you know, some of what we talk about is symbology, but they kind of cross over a bit. Like, you know, for instance, Persephone has one, Demeter has another, but there's also a crossover between Persephone and Hecate, and you know, there's a
mm-hmm.
it's a triangle.
Right.
It's the triad.
Right.
So we kind of
right. We'll talk a little bit more about that triad then too.
I think so.
I have strong feelings. But
yes, I do too.
Probably
do too.
Different than yours.
This is why we have two people. We can differ on air. We won't come to blows. We promise. We promise. Just have a tendency to see the interesting dynamics. They even talk about Demeter as the old woman.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, see, you know, that makes me as a mother feel sometimes very old too. But and there's, you know, the shaft of wheat, of the harvest, the shaft of wheat.
Right.
That is her symbol, her representation.
Right. And you see the field of wheat with the poppy growing in it, that
yeah.
single poppy, which is a symbol of Persephone, but also Demeter.
Demeter.
Right.
So you have many different things that are part of her mythology that you do see incorporated, and we don't think of it until we start looking for it.
Looks like it's time.
And we will be back after the break.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30. Kendala's Corner, starring Kendala Kambisa and Michael Correll, Mondays 5 to 7. The Crystal Silence League Hour, hosted by John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6. In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, starring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific, at 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we're back. So real quick before we get back to Demeter, just a friendly reminder to folks who may be in the area of Santa Rosa next weekend. That's the 15th and the 16th of October, 2016.
I hope it's 2016. I'm not back in the back future.
It is going to be the Santa Rosa Mystic Fair, which is going on several years now, and there'll be 4 years. There'll be lots of cool readers and vendors selling different types of metaphysical and magical wares. Milk and Honey will be there. Elvira will be there doing readings. Lucky Mojo will be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Free parking, free admission, and an optional wristband that donations go to, what's the organization?
Dogs for Diabetics.
Right. And then it gets you special discounts from different vendors and
that are participating in it.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, back to
Demeter. Yeah.
One of the things I did like to regress to is the when Persephone becomes the queen of the underworld, she also has keys. Okay, which is, again,
right.
We will find out there's another part of this that has the deity Hecate has keys. But
yes.
She is basically likened unto the tarot card, the Hierophant, who actually was the papess, or the female
pope, right.
Female pope,
right.
Which they then changed because of obvious reasons for more significant, which
right.
we won't
well,
delve into.
Yeah, the whole
nother.
Female pope.
Oh,
that's
my
blasphemous.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Terrible. But it's the keys of life and death.
Yeah.
So it is a symbol of hers.
Yeah. And there are lots of stories of Demeter being an old beggar woman, very much like you find in mythology across the planet, where there's the old beggar woman who asks for some food or for some shelter. And then, of course, you know, there's always someone who turns her down and they get cursed, and then there's someone who invites her in and she blesses their children with immortality or whatever. And here there's a story with Demeter where she does something very similar in the palace of Celius to the king of Eleusis. And she asks for shelter. She assumes the form of an old woman, and he lets her in and gives her shelter. And to reward him, she plans to make his son immortal. Demophion is his son. And so she does this whole thing with ambrosia and puts him on a fireplace in order to do this spell, this magical ritual that will give him immortality. There's something about fire and being reborn, right? However, his mother walks in the middle of this ritual and loses her freaking mind, as you can imagine, seeing your baby child on top of a pyre about to be lit on fire. And so this young boy does not become
immortal.
So Demeter feels bad. She made this promise. Like, you know, I told you I'd take care of your son. So instead she takes him on as a student and teaches him everything she knows about agriculture.
Yes.
So this is another way where the goddess brings these skills to humanity, which is, there's always not always, in most traditions across the planet, there is some god of agriculture who picks up a human and says, hey, buddy, this is how we do it, right? In the Greek, and the ancient Greek, that's Demeter.
Right.
Thank her for the viticulture.
Oh, my God. Just think of all those vineyards that are grateful for that. Now, interesting enough, and this is something I'm going to spark in you. One of the things they talk about is that Persephone and Hades have a child named Dionysus.
Really?
Yes. One of the things I've found in my research is that Persephone actually is the mother of Dionysus.
Yes, I've heard that. I've not heard that Hades was the father.
Well, that was under the rape version, take it for what it is. But then there is, if I'm not mistaken, there is another one with regards to Demeter
being the mother of Dionysus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because there are tales where Zeus is the father, and you know we know well that Zeus is a bit of a philanderer, and he does lots of terrible things with his sexuality, forcing it on many other poor hapless and helpless maidens. One of the tales for Dionysus is, you know, then he recognizes, oh, this is my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so poor Dionysus is then tortured by Hera, his stepmother, for the rest of his life because she's so pissed that this thing was born of of Zeus and Persephone or Demeter.
Or Demeter, either way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it kind of made – I went, oh, you talk about viticulture and I think of wine and I think of Dionysus and there you go. That's my train of thought.
Yeah.
But it obviously we have to keep going back to the concept that when you get to the non-matriarchal viewpoints, especially in the Greeks, they father everything from everyone all over the place.
Right.
There is no delineation about who belongs to who or where they're at.
Right, and again, that goes back to that regionality, right?
Mm-hmm.
This story comes from over here in Athens, and this story comes from over here, and they're different, but close enough.
Right.
You know, and in modern times, we've just sort of mushed all of that together.
Yeah.
You know.
Try and make it, compress it. It's like, okay, we're going to compress this into goo.
But she has, Demeter, she has lots of titles. Mistress of the house, nightmare, giver of customs, legislator, the green shoot, sending gifts from the earth, broad-faced or eyes, apple bearer, sheep bearer, bather, warmth, all of these things. And, you know, no matter what, if you look at these words, they really do bring this, like, big mama earth energy with them. Because even rules, even, you know, there are laws of nature that humanity has no control over.
Truly.
And those laws of nature are Demeter's.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so moving, obviously, to the next phase from being a mother and then going into what would be the crone, which, again, we have to look at what that word has been given a negative spin on it. But we will take it from the wise one, the one who is able to see and understand a bigger picture.
Right.
And one of the things that in doing a little bit of the research here, I found that Hecate, the reason why she doesn't spend so much time when Persephone is taken and Demeter gets all upset and she says, well, you saw her, why didn't you do any, you know, Hecate's point of reference is there are bigger things that are happening and what may happen here only be a small piece of a bigger puzzle. She didn't quite say it that way. I did. But it was the idea she saw and knew certain events have to take place.
Right.
Certain other events to take place also.
Right. Right.
So her sense of calm and like, okay, so that's what's going on. Oh, no problem.
Right. Which, let's be real, that if you look at how a young person approaches a situation and you look at how an older person with 50 years on, you know, that young person approaches a situation, there is wisdom in life lived.
Right.
You know, so here we're looking at the crone, Hecate, as the one with the most experience, the one who's been through it and done it and seen it and has a deeper understanding, where you have Persephone, who is, it's new, these feelings, falling in love, sexuality, it's all new, and she's being led by those urges and those feelings. And Demeter is somewhere in between these things where she understands the urges and the feelings and she has more wisdom, but she's still experiencing releasing her child for the first time.
Right.
You know, where we have Hecate who's been there, done that.
Exactly. Now, she is the goddess of the crossroads. She is considered, she is always talked about as having three faces or three aspects, because she is, I believe, the way we've described it, is she's the culmination of all.
Right.
The wisdom of all.
Right.
And obviously, you know, her place in the myth is, as you pointed out, psychopomp. She can go between
the
underworld
realms.
And all the realms, actually.
Yeah.
She has no problems. She can go from one to the other. And I think if you think about, truthfully, you think about the older person, they can go between different things. They can either do, they may not be able to run the mile in a shorter space of time, but they are able to do different things and move between the worlds of the youth, the parental time frame, and then their counterparts in wisdom.
Right, right.
Doesn't mean we always want to stay with those people.
Sure. Now, my opinion, this is super just my opinion, I do not believe that Persephone and Demeter and Hecate were held as a triple goddess in ancient times. I think that's a very modern pagan construct. I think that there's been this desire, or, you know, it comes from a specific book that I won't name right now, but there was, you know, some writing done where there was this triple face of the goddess. And so modern paganism tried very hard to fit goddesses into this triple face. And here we have Persephone, Demeter, and Hecate, who were sort of forced into that triple face. And it works. It absolutely works. And you have Hecate, who is seen as a many-faced goddess because of being at the crossroads. She can see down all the roads. She's all-seeing, right? But I don't believe that those three goddesses were necessarily held together as maiden, mother, and crone. I think that's more of a modern pagan adaptation.
I'd probably say that I have more of a understanding to say that that's likely to be what happened. It's also a way we know that the phases of the phases of humanity go from, you know, youth to the middle portion and then to the older, you know, age bracket. I would like to add that as I'm in the older age bracket, I would like to say more that there's an elder, which is kind of between Demeter's side and, like, the crone in that sense, because we haven't gotten to that far end of being stationary and letting things come to us. We're still out there running around.
Well, I think there's actually more than three faces. So I like this maiden, mother, crone thing. I think there's something beautiful and powerful there, but I think growth and life is more complicated, you know, and I think there are more than three phases. I think there's a myriad of phases, and you might be 70 and be a maiden, and it has nothing to do with sexuality. It's about the energetic and where you are and what you're doing. So the triple face doesn't really work for me, but there is something powerful to it. You know, I don't want to dismiss it, but I think there's more than three phases.
And we did that with the moon.
Yeah,
I mean, you literally have three major phases, three major phases. But then you have everything that's in between that is changing moment to moment.
Yeah.
So I feel that's a viable, valid point of reference.
Yeah.
I feel that probably the basis of what they have is, and this is something that I didn't know about, is that the Mediterranean only has three seasons.
Right.
And because it only has three seasons, that's why we wound up with the triplicities of things.
Right, which is why you got to look at where these gods come from. What is their history? What is the culture? What were these ancient people doing? The more you understand that, the more these stories make sense. And, you know, what's fascinating about Hecate, you talk about this temple that you've been to, and I'd love to hear more about that. But for the most part, Hecate didn't get temples because she was in every house. She was in every gate. She was the goddess of the crossroads, of that liminal space in between. She was the guardian of the front door. So she wasn't Zeus with this huge freaking monument built to her, because she was in every freaking home. She was she was and is a badass.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. And she, because Hecate is that way, she becomes eventually Christianity queen of the witches.
Right.
You know, because what do you do with someone who does prophecy and divination and
works with herbs.
Works with herbs and all these things.
Yeah.
So we wind up with a process where she takes on a certain area and a certain energy on her very own. But you have to realize that, as you say, there's more than three faces.
Yeah.
We just happen to be utilizing this in a specific way to help with this particular myth.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And that, I think, is what we're trying to put together. But I know my goddess is Hecate.
Right.
So it is something that came a part of it. And it's interesting, when my introduction to this was three women, two women and myself. And she made herself known, and she gave us a specific task. We were the Sisterhood of the Red Cauldron.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, as we have all done our work and everything, we disbanded because we were no longer the Sisterhood of the Red Cauldron, which was the bleeding time.
Mm-hmm.
We had gone to the crone time in a different version. So in essence, we had become identified with her in a different way.
Yeah.
And, yes, the sisterhood is an ancient tradition, but it's ancient because we all are part of that as we grow through that particular aspect in our lives.
Right.
So it was very interesting, once I was doing this work on this, is to see, because I'm on the other side, and I mourn the loss of that sisterhood, and I mourn the loss of the camaraderie in that way, but then that was a time in my life.
Right.
And now I have a different time, just like giving my child to her adulthood is a whole process that you then mourn, but then you are joyous, especially as you see their growth and everything. And then you get scared because they do stupid things. But that's part of, you know.
That's part of it.
Part of it.
Yeah.
So, but this was a very personal, when I got to Hecate, it was very personal.
Sure.
But it was also very revealing to me of the bigger picture.
Right.
And where
that relationship has shifted and changed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think, you know, our information is vast and broad, and we're trying to hit on as many things and as unusual things. We have to also say the illusion mysteries is a very big thing. And there were two sets. There was the lesser, which was open to anyone, man, woman, slave, or otherwise.
Right.
One prerequisite is you could not have killed a person.
Mm.
If you killed a person, then you had to go through some ritual bathing and cleansing before you could do that, purification. The second one was the greater illusion mysteries, and that was specific. You had to be an initiate. You had to be part of the process and initiate and go through the various stages, because that was more closed. And the secrets that were imparted.
Yeah.
To this day, we don't know what happened.
Right. Yeah.
I know. It's frustrating, but that was because it gave you immortality.
Right.
And if you spoke of it, you then broke the immortality.
Right. Secrets.
I know the secrets.
Yeah. There's this ritual. The Athenian Greeks did this ritual called deep non, and it was only done on the new moon, and it was for Hecate, and it was, you would serve a meal to Hecate and to the restless dead, right? So on the new moon, you would make, you would go to the crossroads, you would set out a meal at the crossroads or at the shrine you had for Hecate, and you would allow the expiation, which is Hecate taking her piece, right? And then you would purify the household. So you would then come home from the crossroads, cleanse your home, and do a whole cleansing process.
Wow.
And that was done every new moon.
Wow.
I love it.
That's a lot of energy work. Of course, they didn't have larger houses like we had.
So, vacuum
and dust and, you know, all that. So, and also, we, you know, considering what they would have to clean, I don't know.
Right. But we are, so there's so much more we could say about Hecate, but I do want to just offer, you know, these are three distinct energetics, three different goddesses. And yes, they go together very well, like peanut butter and jelly.
Yes.
But they're different. And so if you're feeling a call, if you're feeling interested, if one of these goddesses is giving you the shivers, I would encourage you to do a little bit more research, look at some images of these goddesses online, maybe get a statue, create an altar, start leaving offerings. But this is a jumping off point to do more. right? We can only talk so much about these goddesses, and literally it's a drop in the bucket of the information.
Yes.
You know, especially Hecate, who really has been, she's one of those goddesses that's been totally taken on by neo-paganism. The new pagan movement freaking loves Hecate.
Mm-hmm.
She's become queen of the witches. She's really stepped into that role much more than she would have for the ancient Greeks. For the ancient Greeks, she was a powerful witch who guarded the crossroads and knew all kinds of magical stuff, but it wasn't witch like we think about witch. It didn't have that biting, negative connotation that it can have now.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is, again, we are only talking from a perspective of a now and modern, whereas the ancients had a whole different version of what was going on. First of all, everything to them was imbued with all these deities,
right.
All these energies.
Right.
Nothing was segregated or stopped or, we'll only look at trees or we'll only look at this or we'll only feel that.
Right.
So, again, we keep trying to re-imbue that by our conversations to start looking and feeling what is going on, if either any of these actually interest you. And remember, we are all in one of these areas in our life because it is life.
Right. And if one of these goddesses really does feel exciting, then do call on them and work with them and speak to them, because what is remembered lives.
Mm-hmm.
And these gods they stay alive by us working with them, by us remembering them, by us giving them offerings. That's what keeps them strong.
Mm-hmm.
They need us as much as we need them.
Just like working with ancestors.
Right, absolutely. They are the ancestors.
They are the ancestors.
Absolutely.
So,
and
with...
1 minute left.
We have 1 minute left. Oh, quickly, talk about the tea. Well, the tea room, actually, I know, is sold out.
Yeah, the tea intro is sold out. There's a waiting list.
Okay,
yeah.
So we can't quite... We can broadcast it, but it isn't ready for people to. But we will be talking next week about the chalice. And the Holy Grail and all of what it entails.
Drinking magical elixirs.
Ooh, we won't get drunk. We promise until after.
I was just thinking that. Maybe we'll take some shots.
There you are. I'll have my Cinzano.
I'll have some scotch.
Oh, there you
Irish
go.
Irish whiskey.
Well, and then we'll be on under the table talking instead of here in my dining room at the top of the table as we sit looking at each other.
Show.
But I think that this is a very exciting show. I think that there was a lot here, and I enjoy the dynamics, and you may have turned me from the triplicity.
Ooh.
So, but at this point, it's always worth looking at.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet, and merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.